Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. Thank you all for coming. Please take a seat. I'd like to get started. If I could remind everybody, please, to turn off their phones. I can hear heavenly music already. That'll be a good reminder. I'd like to start by thanking our sponsors for the shiur today. The Wednesday morning Beit Midrash is sponsored throughout the year. Le'ilu Nishmos Daniel ben David and Limud bat Avram Strauss, and Mordechai ben Moshe and Reisel bat Yosef Meir Marcus, Zichronam Livracha. They are the parents of Judy and Menachem Marcus. The shiur specifically during 2036 is sponsored Le'ilu Nishmos Rana bas Brandit and Zelig ben Kalman, Aleim Shalom. And also a specific and special sponsorship for this shiur. Miriam Marcus is sponsoring the shiur. She often does before, almost always does before Tisha B'Av, for the yahrzeit of her beloved mother, Liva Pesha Bat Natan, which is on the 7th of Av. This is her 9th yahrzeit, and also her Zayden Natan Ben Moshe, which is his 71st yahrzeit on Tisha B'Av. And also as a schus for a refuah shleima for Peleg Shabtai ben Chaviv Aleah, who is a little boy who is having his brit after many, many months of surgeries and having another surgery in the brit on Tu B'Av, Be'ezrat Hashem, should have Refuah Shleima, and with Bechol Chole Yisrael. Now, I was originally planning, in my ignorance, that we would have two more shiurim today and next week, but that was whipped away from me. So part two of Lifnei Iver, which I was going to give you, will have to just wait, because I did not want to put off today's shiur, which is a new shiur, which I think is very important for us to consider before Tisha B'Av, where I want to talk about the idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, which we've never spoken about in this forum, but which raises a number of very important ideas, halachically and hashkafically. We're going to start with the hashkafa and end with the halacha, and very appropriate for us to consider at this time of year. I want to interface that a little bit and integrate it with Sinat Chinam, talk about a little bit about what that is, what that isn't, but there'll be a lot of very interesting material. Let's start with the Brit of Arvut, which sometimes gets a little overlooked, meaning we stood at Sinai, we entered into the Brit at Sinai, but we also entered into another Brit, the Brit Arvut, the Brit of Mutual Responsibility, which we entered into at Har Eival and Har Grizim in Sefer Yoshua. And Moshe predicts this and instructs the people to do this at the end of Dvarim, number one. This will get you in the mood for Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Atem nitzavim hayom, kulchem, lifnei Hashem Elokeichem. You're all here, says Moshe. Rosheichem, Shivteichem, Zikneichem, Shodreichem, Kol Ish Yisrael. Every Jewish man is here, but not just the men. Tapachem, the kids are here. Nesheichem, all the women are here. Vegerecha, Asher Bekerev Machanecha, and others who've joined the Machane from outside. Michotze Veitzecha, Shoiv Memecha, the workers, the upper classes, the lower classes, everybody's here. Avracha beBrit Hashem Elokecha, you are entering into a brit to Baalato and to his oath, his firm oath. Hashem Hashem Elokecha Koretim Chayom. What is this for? Laman Hakim Otcha Hayom Lo La'am. You are today becoming a people. When you enter into this brit, you will not just be 603,000 Jews. You will be Am Yisrael in its fullest sense. For who Yeh Lecha Elokim, and God is going to be your God in its fullest sense. Ka'ashin Ibe Lecha Yibal Lach. Sorry, Ka'ashin Nishba Lavatecha LaAvraham Yitzchak Yaakov. Lo itchim levadchem anochi koret et habrit hazot. This is very important. This brit is not just with the people standing at Har Eival and Har Grizim. Ve'ta'ala hazot. Ki et asher yeshno po imanu omed hayom. Those who are with us standing today, they are part of the brit. Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu. Ve'et asher einenu po imanu hayom. And those who are in the future are all, that's us in this room. I don't know if they could have imagined the idea of people 3,000 years later reading this pasuk and saying, yes, that's us. We're still here 3,000 years later. And then he gives the warning. I've skipped a few pasukim, but I'll go on here. Pen yeshbachem ish isha. Maybe there's a man or a woman here, mishbacha or shevet, who's turning his heart away from Hashem Elokeinu. He's going to go off and do his own thing. And he basically says, I'll be all right. I'll be fine. No one's going to look at me. No one's going to care about me. No one's going to know about me. And he says, no, because it will all backfire on you. The land will be destroyed. God will not forgive that. And if you look in the, after the next ellipsis in Chaf Aleph, the Am HaDor HaAcharon, and a later generation will come, B'neichem Asher Yakumu Me'Achareichem, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren after you, V'Hanochri, a non-Jew, Asher Yavo Ma'eretz Rechokah, who will come from afar, V'Ru'u Et Makot HaAretz Ahu, and he'll look, and they'll look at the land, the desolate land, V'Etachalu Eha, and all its curses, Asher Chila Hashem Ba, Gofrit V'Melach, Sreifa Kol Atza, it'll look like it's been consumed, burnt, Lot Tizarav, Lot Tatzmiach, nothing will grow, nothing will, no trees, no bushes. Lo Yaleh Bar Kol Esev, not even a blade of grass. Come up, Echad Sodom Amorah Ad Mavet Zoim. Just like the towns of, I like to call them the five towns. The five towns down in the Dead Sea, okay, that were over here. It's four of them, because only four were overruled, okay. Hashafach Hashem Ba'apol B'chamato. Va'amru Kol Agoyim. And the non-Jews will say, Ameh Asa Hashem Kacha La'aretz Asot. What could be the reason why this land was so afflicted? Machari Afa Godel Azeh. What was this great anger? Va'amru Al Asher. Asher Azvu Et Brit Hashem Elokei Avotam. They abandoned the Brits with the God of their fathers, Asher Karat Imam Behotziyo Atam Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Va'yitashem Hashem Me'alat Matam. And God threw them, scattered them from their land. Ba'acha B'chema B'ketzef Gadol, with great anger. V'yashlichem El Eretz Acharet, with this big lamed in the Sefer Torah, which Rav Hirsch says, because we're there to be teachers to the Jewish people and beyond. Acharet K'yom Azeh. And then the final famous pasuk, which we'll be looking at today. Ha'nistarot L'Hashem Elokeinu. The hidden things are for God. V'haniglot lanu levaneinu, but the revealed things are for us and our children ad olam forever, la'asot et kol divrei ha-Torah hazot. And of course, Mark Twain, when he came to Palestine, the Holy Land, in the 1860s, he knew this psukim well, and he writes consciously as the non-Jew who came from afar and observes the land of Israel just a few years before the beginning of the new Yishuv, in Pesach Tikva, and Rishon Letzion, etc. And he describes it almost to the word, like it predicts here. So what does it mean, Hanistarot L'Hashem Elokeinu? The hidden things are for God. But this brit means that the revealed things are for us. So Rashi brings down one shita. We'll see it's only one shita in the Gemara and explains what this means. Number two, Anistarot L'Hashem Elokeinu. The Ein Tomru, if you were going to ask, Ma b'yadenu lasot, what could we have done? It's not, there was a man or a woman or a group, a family who went off. It's not, we couldn't do anything. Atamanish et harabim al hirhura hayachid. You're going to punish the whole nation because there are people who are thinking in their heads, I don't want to be part of it. Shneema, because it says, Pein yesh b'chein ish o isha, v'achakach v'ru et ha-makot ha-aretz ha-hi. And the land's going to be absolutely destroyed. V'halo ein adam yodea tmunotav shel chavero. I don't know what's going on in people's heads. Don't hold me responsible. Ein ani ma'anish etchem ala nisrot. Says the God, says God, I won't punish you for the hidden things. Shehem la'ashem elokeinu. That will be that person will pay the price individually before God. But the revealed things, we have a responsibility to get rid of that negativity from within our community. And if we don't sort it out, we are all responsible. We are all going to be punished. And he says, Nakud alanu levanenu, and there's this dots over lanu levanenu lidrosh, she'afal aniglot lo ana shetarabim ad she'avru et ha-yarden, to tell us that this wasn't going to happen right exactly there and then, but only when they crossed the Jordan, v'shekiblu alehem et ha-shavua b'har grizim b'har eval, v'na'asu arevim ze lazeh. Na'asu arevim ze lazeh. And I brought you a beautiful Ramchal, which I'm not going to read here, this could be homework for you, Maharal, excuse me, beg your pardon, a Maharal in number 3, who says, he's talking about the prohibition of lending money on interest. And he says, we're required to lend each other money because of our kinship, because of our achdut, because the fact that we're all one family. That's why we have to lend money to each other, to help each other. Somebody who takes interest is destroying the very nature of the bond that means that requires us to lend to each other. And he says that goes to the very root of what it is to be a people. He says, and only when Am Yisrael went into to Eretz Yisrael, they became a people in the fullest sense of the word. It's very interesting. I was just listening to a podcast on the way in this morning. Melanie Phillips. Maybe some of you know Melanie Phillips. I know her a little bit personally. She was recently on a podcast, and she was saying, she's a very British Jew, grew up very much in England, not really connected so much to Israel. But she said she realized over the last 20 years that she only feels like a full Jew when she's in Eretz Israel. She said she couldn't believe that she would say that. But she feels that way very strongly. This is the Maharal. The Maharal gives a mashal of water. Water is all over the place, but when you put it in a kli, it holds its shape. So Eretz Yisrael is the kli, Klal Yisrael is the water, and when we put it in the kli, it holds its shape, and therefore we have this absolute responsibility, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, and we have to work out what does that mean, what are the implications of that for us right now. So let's go over the page. This is tested immediately they get into the land. In the Battle of Jericho. I don't think we've ever had the opportunity to learn Sefer Yoshua together in these shiurim. It doesn't come up that much in contemporary halachic issues. But here we are. I'm not going to read the whole thing through. But if you remember the story, let's pick a few pesukim from number 4. The Jericho Sagerit and the Sagerit. Jericho was the most closed up city, Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. Ein Yotzei Ve'ein Ba, totally hermetically sealed. V'yomer Hashem al Yoshua, Re'ei Natati B'yadecha, B'yadcha et Jericho, Ve'et Malka, Giburei Hechayel. Even though they are a strong army, a well-armed army, I'm going to deliver them over to you. The Sabotim et Ha'ir, you'll go around the city, call Anshei HaMilchama, Hekif et Ha'ir, do Hakafot, Pam Achad, Kota, Aser, Sheshet Shemim. For 6 days, you'll do one Hakafa. But I don't know if they sang the songs like we do on Simchas Torah after each Hakafa, you know, Mipi, okay, well, maybe not, okay. Vayihi b'yom ha'shvi, and on the 7th day, v'yashkimu ka'alot ha'shachar, you have to get up early, go to Hashkama, v'yisobu et ha'ir, k'mishpat hazeh, you have to go around the city 7 times, 7 times. Rak b'yom ha'hu, savanu ed savavu et ha'ir, 7 times. So, 7 circuits on the 7th day. V'yihi b'pam ha'shvi, t'ku b'shkal, no m'shofrot, they'll blow the shofar, yom ha'yoshua el'am, hariu ki nasan Hashem lachem et ha'ir. And you'll scream out, you'll say, scream everybody, cry out, because Hashem is giving us the city. And then, look what happens next. V'hayta ha'ir chayrem. And Yeshua is going to say that the city has to be chayrem. He v'kol ha'shebal Hashem, rak rachav ha'zornot tichyeh. Only Rachav, who kept the spies alive. He v'kol ha'she'ita b'bayit, ki ech be'ata ha'ita malachim. She hid the spies the who were there on the mission, ha'she shalachnu. V'rak atem, and this is Yeshua now speaking to the Jewish people. Rak atem shimru min ha'chayrem. Be very careful about the chayrim. Pentachrimu lekachtem mirchem. Don't ever take from any of it. V'samtem et ha'machane Yisrael lechayrim, because then, otherwise, the Jewish people will become chayrim. V'achartem ato, and will be destroyed. V'kol kesef, says Yeshua, any silver, v'zah, v'kli nechoshet, u'barzel. Kodesh hu l'Hashem, it's all sanctified. Oitze Hashem yavo, yes, the brit yavo has to be brought to the mikdash. V'yar ha'am, and the people cried out. V'yirah ha'am, and the people cried out. And they blew on the shofars. When the people heard the shofar blowing, blasting out, the Yariu Ha'am Trua Gedola, and the people let out an enormous scream on this last day. Down came the walls. Now here's the interesting question. What happens next? The walls have now sunk down, and the people then cross, the army crosses into the city. Ish Negdo. Each man opposite something, v'yilkedu et ha'ir, and that's how they conquered the city. Now, almost every parish that I've looked at quite a lot, understands ish negdo to mean that the walls came down and they didn't have to all go single file into the city, because wherever the soldiers stood around the wall came down and they just walked straight in as they were, and they went straight into the city like that. Except Rachav's house, which was in the wall, which by some miracle managed not to fall down. That's an interesting thing. But I listened to a shiur by Rav Boaz Mori of Leif HaTorah, Rosh Hashiva in Bet Shemesh. And his chat in this, which was interesting, I didn't get a chance to speak to about it. Ish Negdo means when the walls came down, what happened to the people in Jericho? It was a very strongly armed army. He says they had to do hand-to-hand combat. Ish Negdo, the soldiers came through and they fought with all of the Canaanite soldiers until they managed to conquer the city, and they built and they took the city that way, and they destroyed the city. Okay, fine. But then what happens in the next parak is there's a problem. Number 5. The Yimalu B'nai Yisrael Ma'al B'cheirim. But the Jewish people, the B'nai Yisrael, took the spoils. Who took the spoils? Vayikach Achan, just one man. Achan ben Karmi ben Zabdi ben Zerach lematzei Yehuda. This man Achan from the tribe of Yehuda. Minacherim vayichav Hashem b'bnei Yisrael, and God was angry with the whole Jewish people. Vishlach Yeshua and Hashem yirichu ha'ai, and then what, they of course are completely oblivious to this. Then Yeshua then sends to Ai Hashem in Beit Aven, okay, mikedem lebeit El, near to Beit El. Ai is a little shtetlach. They just captured Yericho. They're invincible. They go to Ai, the little shtetlach. Vayomer aleihem lemo alu v'raglu et ha'aretz. Go and do some spying. V'alu anashim v'raglu et ha'ai, and they did the spying in Ai. Okay, the Yeshuva El Yeshua v'yomru elav, and they came back to Yeshua and said to them, we don't need a big army for this. Kalafim esh, maybe a few thousand men. Shlosh kalafim, maybe 3,000 ish. Yalu v'yakuv et ha'yakuv et ha'ai, we can take that, no problem. Al tigash amad kol ha'am. Don't make everybody crazy with this. They're only a low grade army. This is what they call these days a conceptia. That we now know what that word means in Israel. That they had this idea that they all convinced themselves that the people they were fighting against were just losers and they weren't going to do anything and nothing's going to happen. Just one second, I'll come to you in a second. So what actually happened? They sent a small army, a division of 3,000 men, ish, and they were smashed to pieces. 36 soldiers of the Jewish army were slaughtered. They chased them right from the gate, and they smoked them down by as they went down. And the Jewish people were absolutely distraught. They would now, you know, how could this happen? How could we allow this to happen? How could these locals who we thought were just losers, how could they have turned around and killed so many of our army? Okay, and how did that happen? Yeshua tears his clothes, and he falls before the Aaron ad ha'arev, until the ad ha'arev. They put ash on their heads. And here is the response. Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua, Kumlach, what are you doing on the floor? Get off the floor. We'll see in a minute why he says Kumlach. Lama ze ata nofel panecha. That is not the response, that you're tearing your clothes and you're falling on the floor. Chata Yisrael. The Jewish people have sinned. Which of course later on, and this is a different shir, Achal pi shechata Yisrael hu. Meaning even though they have sinned, the Jews are still the Jews. They have not stopped being God's people. V'gam avru et briti, they've broken my promise. Asher tziviti otam. V'gam laku min acherim, they've taken from the acherim. V'gam gamvu, and they've stolen. V'gam kichashu, and they've denied it. V'gam samu b'chaleim, and they've hidden it away. Kum kadesh ha'am v'amati ikdashu l'chachar, ki ko amar Hashem elokei Yisrael. Get ready for tomorrow. We're going to take Ai. And they took Ai, and they captured, they took the whole army, and they took Ai. Okay, so these two stories you're, I'm sure, quite familiar with, but I hope you don't mind that we recap a little bit on them. Yes, Mrs. Israel.
Yes,
my understanding is the Midrash says it was on Shabbos. That's my understanding. Okay, now, who took the spoils? Achan took the spoils. Why does he blame everybody else? Why is it their responsibility? So we'll see. So Rav Mori, who I just mentioned before, said that sometimes when individuals act in a certain way, there's a certain societal norm that allows it to happen. The society knows this is happening. Maybe the soldiers there who were fighting, they fought hand-to-hand combat, he says. Maybe they felt they deserved the spoils. Maybe they felt it was unfair they couldn't take. But they didn't take. Only one person took. But he wouldn't have been able to take unless there had been an attitude, an approach in society that enabled this to happen. And it's not enough to say that there are fringe, lunatic fringe. Yeah, these guys are just crazies. They just did that. We're not responsible for them. No, they live in a context in your society, and you are responsible for them.
Does that mean that Alfred took the spoils on Shabbos?
Yeah, that was the least of his problems, but yes, probably. No, the Shabbos, yeah, he could have taken the spoils on Shabbos. I'm not sure. I don't know if he took the spoils on Shabbos. But okay, in the end, what do they do to Achan? And we'll see this, it opens up the whole sugi to us. Number 6. Vayomer Yehoshua, Ma'ar chatanu yarkecha Hashem, what you destroyed for us, God will now destroy for you. Vayomer zeh, on this day, v'yirgamu ato, and they stoned him, they killed him, they executed him. Kol Yisrael, the Jewish people, Eben, v'yisrafu otam, and they burnt them. They burnt them. Presumably, we'll see that means the stuff that he took that he shouldn't have took. Be'esh, v'yisgalu otam ba'avanim. And they stoned them. Who did they stone? So Rashi says, V'yisrafu otam, number 7, ha'ohel, okay, they burned down his tent with all the stash of his stuff, ha'matatalin, and all the stuff that he'd stolen from Yericho. V'yiskalu otam, and they stoned them, who? Hashor, the habehema, the animals that he'd taken away, the animals had to die. But Metsuda David says something else. Number 8, V'yiskalu otam, banav ubenotav v'shvarav. His family were killed. His family were killed. And then there's a bracket. We don't know who added this into the manuscript. Maybe it was him, maybe it was someone else. And it could be because they knew what had happened. They knew that this was the dysfunction in their family. And they didn't do anything about it. Oh, the Chazal didn't say this, but that's why he's saying this. Meaning, we'll see in a minute, the Gemara talks about this. Once already there are people who know about it, but turn a blind eye, that allows it to spread and to spread, and everybody becomes, to some degree, responsible. And therefore, what we need to really address here, I'm not going to take any questions because I need to get through quite a bit today. What we really need to address here is, what is the extent of our responsibility? Really, do we have this a guy in the society that is doing his own thing? Do we really need to be responsible? Okay, his wife and his kids know about it, but no one else was doing this. It appears that this is our responsibility, and we're going to look at the magnitude of that soon. Look over to page 3. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, you know something? Achan, he was a repeat offender, but no one had done anything about it until now. Number 9. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Chanina. Melamed Shema'al Achan B'Shloisha Charama. Actually, he'd done this twice before he got to Yericho. Shnaim B'Yemei Moshe, Ve'echa B'Yemei Yeshua. He did it already with Moshe. When they, the king of Arad, maybe they, the Og and Sichon, etc., etc. He did it before. Shenema, because they say to him, he admits, ukazot ukazot asiti. Kazot ukazot asiti. I've done this before. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mishum Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Shimon, chamisha. He'd done it 5 times altogether. Arba b'yemei Moshe, 4 times in the time of Moshe, ve'echa b'yemei Yoshua. And once now. Shenema, anuchi chatati, l'ashem elokei Yisrael, they want to say he'd done it more and more. So, okay, why weren't they responsible till now? Why were they not punished because of this? They knew it was going on. Listen to this. This is not what you're going to expect. The Jewish people were not punished for secret, private things until they crossed the Jordan. According to this opinion, once we crossed the Jordan and stood at Har Gerizim, not only are we responsible for the things we know about, they were responsible for the things we should have known about. We should have known about them. There was stuff going on. There was abuse going on. There was dysfunction going on. Oh, I didn't know about that. It's not my... No, it was apparently our responsibility. And he says, Ketanai, this is a machlokes tanaim, of which Rashi, the famous Shita, only brings one side. Look at what he says. Ketanai, 3-4 lines up from the bottom. Hanistarot l'Hashem Elokeinu v'aniglod lanu l'vaneinu ad olam. Now, doesn't that sound obvious? We're only responsible for the public stuff, not the private stuff. Lama nikud al lanu l'vaneinu. What are the dots for al lanu l'vaneinu? Va'al ayin sheba'ad, and on the ayin of ad olam. Whenever there are dots on a word, it's telling us, do not read this word the way that it looks though it's meant to, as though it's meant to be read. Malamed is teaching us, Shalom anashala nistarot, we are only responsible for the secret things, ad she'avru Yisrael ha'yarden, as a yarden, once we cross the Jordan. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, says Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Rabbi Nechemia, and this is Rashi's shita that he brings. Rabbi Nechemia says, really? V'ki anashala nistarot la'olam, are we ever responsible for the secret things? It says that, you know, we're never going to be responsible for these things forever, only on the niglot. Just like we were never responsible for the secret things, so too we're not responsible for the revealed things until we cross the Jordan. Okay, shkoyach. So what's going on here? 2 views in the Gemara. One view is we're arevim zelazer just for the revealed things. And one is we're arevim zelazer all for the things we don't know about. So that comes back to the question, how can we not know that? How can we be responsible if we don't know? So look at this Malbim. This Malbim, I think, is very powerful. Number 10, he explains it. Dayanei Yisrael, the leaders of the Jewish people, the Chachameihem, and their wise men, Umanhigeihem, Srichim Heim Lepashpesh Tamid, they have to be constantly vigilant and aware. V'lachzor v'lachkol amase b'nei Iram. Today it's their business to know what people are doing. V'ein lahem hitnatzlut. The leadership should never excuse themselves. Ki yasu ha-ra'ui ala nigla ha-bala yaden. To say, no, what could I do? We didn't know about it. It wasn't revealed. They are responsible to know what goes on behind closed doors. And if the leadership is negligent, then everybody suffers. Even on the private things of people who are doing bad. Because we're responsible for each other. When we cross the Jordan, and we're responsible for each other, we are now responsible even for the private. If we could have possibly done anything about it, that's why we're responsible for Achan. Achan just put it away under his tent. How would we know about that even? No, we're apparently responsible. The leadership has to make sure that it roots out these problems. But, and here's the flip side, when we call Markham Ra'uy Ledayani Yisrael Ulamanigeim Shaloli Zog Zerot, but the leadership has to be careful that it doesn't impose rules, Rechokot, extreme rules, Lekablam Shaloli Ten Michshol Lifneim, which are not going to, but Lifneim Eloiti Ten Michshol, this can link it with last week. Sometimes the leadership actually caused the problem in the first place. And that's why God says to Yeshua, Kumlach, you get up from the floor. Why? Koloma, Ataga Ramtalahem. Very strong. Whose fault is it that Achan took things from Yericho? He said to Yeshua, it's your fault. Why so? And that's why he says, with I, Vasita la Ayu Lamalkaka, Asher Asita Yericho, you'll do to I what you did to Yericho Lamalka, Rak Shalala Tavozalachem. Because, but the shlala, the booty, you should be able to keep. Meaning, who decided that no one was allowed to take the money from Yericho? Yeshua. Why did he do that? Why did he need to say that? The Jewish people are going into Eretz Israel to the victor, go the spoils. He wants to be holy. He wants to be from. He wants to say everything has to go to Cherem. He caused that problem. People can't live up to that. The leadership are responsible not only to know what's going on, but also not to cause that very problem. And then he brings at the end, V'yeshomrim shalon en shu'al anistarot. Maybe the other shita is, no, we're never responsible for hidden things. L'olam, ever. And why were we responsible for Achan? Mipnei sheyadu bo ishto yobanov. Because his wife and kids knew. V'yadi tzlasa, yadi kol ma'alma. And once three people know, everybody knows. We knew. We just pretended we didn't know. We know what's going on. We just push it to the side of our... This is very, very interesting stuff. Because it places a responsibility on us, and I'm going to maybe put that into our present situation in a little bit, to actually not only know what's going on, but not to make it worse, and also to try and do whatever we possibly can to fix it, even if it's not a problem of our making. How far does that go? So after this source, we'll get a bit of clarity. Number 11. This is a remarkable source, a Gemara in Sota. So remember the Har Grizim and Har Eval. Well worth a visit, by the way. If you get the chance to go up to Har Bracha, up there, you'll go to Har Eval, to Har Grizim. There's the valley with Shechem in the valley and the two mountains on the side. So we know from Dvarim that the Levim stood in the middle and the Shvatim stood on the mountains and they turned to each of the mountains and said, Baruch, there's a blessing on people who keep these mitzvot and a curse on people who keep certain other who don't keep these mitzvot, including Lifnei Iver, which is there as well. So look how it works. Tana Rabbanan, number 11. Baruch Bichlal. There's a general Baruch. Baruch Hashem Yakim Es HaTorah Hazeh. A general Baruch to anyone who sustains the Torah. Baruch Bifrat, but then there's Baruch in the specific individual mitzvahs they say. Arur Bichlal, and then there's Arur, generally, Arur Asher Lo Yakim Et HaTorah, etc. And then Arur Bifrat, and then there's specific Arurs on the mitzvah. That gets to four. So we've got four different elements of each mitzvah. There's the general one, and the specific one, Baruch and Arur. Now, you have to do a bit of math here, yeah? Then each mitzvah is Lilmod, Ulelamed, Lishmor, the La'asot. Every mitzvah that comes in the Torah comes really with four key elements. We have to learn it, we have to guard it, we have to do it, and we have to teach it. Every Jew is a teacher. Okay? So Hari Arba, that's four elements to each mitzvah. Arba, the Arba, Hari Shmona, and Shmona, the Shmona, Hari Sheshesre. So every single mitzvah had four elements to it, Baruch Bichlal, Baruch Biprat, Aru Bichlal, Aru Bifrat, and every one of those is really four mitzvahs. In fact, according to some of the Mefarshim, when they stood at Har Grizim and Har Eval, they actually said, Baruch Hashem Loimed, and Baruch Hashem Malamed, and Baruch Hashem Shomer, and Baruch Hashem, etc. Fine. So now we got to, what do we got to? 16. Great. But it's not, we're not over yet. We're not over, it's not over yet. Because then, v'chein b'sinai, v'chein b'arvas mayav. But actually, there were three different britot. You've got Sinai, you've got arvas mayav, and mitzavim, you've got hagrizim, nimsa, and that's how we get to mem chet britot al kol mitzvah mitzvah. So every single mitzvah comes with 48 different britot attached to it. So every mitzvah we do is really multiplied by 48. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, how does this work? Klalos uprotos nemru b'Sinai, the general principles were said on Sinai. V'nishnu ba'oel moed, and they were taught at the Noel moed. V'nishdal shu ba'arvas mayav. So he just differs and he says the three britot were Sinai, Oel moed, and arvas mayav, and not grizim and eval, but he agrees that there were three. The ein lecha kol davar mitzvah mitzvah shekesuv b'Torah, and there is not one mitzvah in the Torah, shonon nikrata aleh arbaim b'shmona britot, which doesn't have 48 with it. Every mitzvah has 48 separate mitzvahs with it. Reb Shimon ben Yehuda ish kvar aka omer mishum Reb Shimon. Now we hear another opinion. Ein lecha mitzvah mitzvah sheksuva b'Torah shelo nikratu ale arba mishmoni britzot. Not only do they have 48 mitzvot multiplied by shel sheish meot elef v'shloishet alafim v'chamesh meot v'chamishim. Every single mitzvah is not just your mitzvah, which is really 48 mitzvot, but it's 48 multiplied by 603,550, which is the number of the people at the time. Okay? So that's a lot of elements. So then Amar Rebbe, then Rebbe Yehuda Anasi comes in and says, I'll raise the stakes even. Amar Rebbe, Ledivrei Rebbe Shimon ben Yehuda, Ish Kfar Akko, according to that opinion, Sha'ama Mishun Rebbe Shimon, Ein lecha kol mitzvah mitzvah shevetera. There is no mitzvah in the Torah shelo nikrata ala arba shmonim britot. That doesn't have 48 britot on it. Shel sheish meod ele shloshet alefim v'chamish v'elash v'chamishim. Nimsa, so it turns out, lechol echad v'echam Yisrael, so every Jewish person now has sheish meod ele v'shloshet alefim v'chamish meod v'chamishim. Okay. That sounds the same as the last one. 48 times 603,550. Says the Gemara. My b'nei. What's he adding? What's the difference? And look at what he says. Amar Mishashia. Arva, our responsibility, the arva de arva, and the responsibility of responsibility, ikabenayu. That's the difference between them. Meaning, think about this. The first opinion with the 603,000 says, I am responsible not just for every mitzvah I do, which is really 48 different mitzvah, 48 britot. Every time I give staka, it's 48 britot and bimakayim. I am responsible for that mitzvah for every other single person of Klal Yisrael. Every other person. And Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, not only am I responsible for them, but I'm responsible to make sure that they're responsible for every single Jewish person in the world. So it's not enough that I say, well, what could I do to influence those people over there? Okay, maybe nothing. But you could do something to help them, and they could do something to help them. See how far this goes? This is all interconnected in the most intricate way. So you end up with literally quadrillions of different responsibilities that interconnect every Jew. Not only am I responsible to do what I can for the other Jew, but to do what I can to make sure that other Jew does what they can to help every other Jew. This is very significant. And therefore, I brought you on the top of page 4 a kind of a pecking order of what I feel are the ways that we deal with the problems of Klal Yisrael. You can take this or leave it. But I put here, consider three levels of response. Let's give an example of our times. Let's pick an example that I think everyone feels quite strongly about, which is very much part of the discussion at the moment, which is to what extent the Haredi community should be drafted to the army. Okay, let's pick something nice and easy to start with. Okay, fine. So I think there are three possible responses. And we had, if you remember, 3-4 shirim on this. Back in the OU Center, you can go on my website, on the OU, you can see all the responses. My position on this is public and people can judge it from them. But the first thing we could do, which is completely wrong, which is sinat chinam, is which we could turn around and say, I reject those people because they're not doing this. I reject that community, I reject those people. That's sinat chinam. Why is it sinat chinam? Because, as I mentioned before, the greatest disservice that anyone ever did to Tisha B'Av was to translate sinam as baseless hatred. Nobody hates anyone for no reason. That's just psychotic. No one acts like that. And when you say it's baseless hatred, people in the audience think, okay, well, I don't hate anybody. That's very strong. And I certainly don't hate anybody for no reason. So I'm obviously not part of the problem. Whatever the problem is, it must be Yenim. It must be them that has baseless hatred. Because I for sure don't have it. Okay? That's not what sinat chinam means. Sinam means rejection, not hatred. Leah was an isha snu'ah. She felt that she was snu'ah. What, Yaakov hated her? Could you use the word hate in English to describe the relationship that Yaakov felt for Leah, or even how she felt that he felt for her? Absolutely not. She felt rejected. She felt that he didn't want her anymore. She was pushed aside. That's what sina is. Lo sisna is achicha bilvavecha. Don't push aside your brother or sister in your mind. So the Or HaChaim says, the minute you don't relate to them as your brother or your sister, as a sibling, then you've done that prohibition. Meaning we disagree with our siblings, we often fight with our siblings, we often feel very strongly that our siblings are making a major mistake in life, but they're still siblings. The minute you say, you know, you're not my family, you're not interested, that's sina. What's the chinam? Chinam is where it's on a personal level. Why? Because there is, in theory, the second level, which is, God forbid, I don't reject you, I just feel strongly about the way that you're behaving. We had a whole shiur about this. I reject your behavior. It's the behavior that's wrong. And that's from the Gemara, because the Gemara talks, us on the Chumash, when the Chumash says, if you see the ox of sonacha, of someone you have sinner for, you still have to help them. So the Gemara says, what do you mean sinner? You're not allowed to have sinner for anybody. Well, who could this person be? And the Gemara says, this is a person who's behaving badly, and you reject the behavior. You still have to help them. Okay, so we're not allowed to judge or reject the people. Certainly not allowed to reject the people. I think that any time you use a noun when it comes to these things that ends in yud mem, then there's always a strong danger of sinat chinam. Okay? The tzionim, the chilonim, the charidim. I think the yud mem is usually a problem ending. Okay? Because, okay, maybe you're saying something which is positive. That's great. But once you're talking about the people, that's sinat chinam. Okay, so the behavior. Okay, so God forbid, I don't reject any person. Okay, charedi person comes up to me, I don't say it's your fault, I don't say I blame you, it's I reject just the behavior. So the Chazon Ish, which we never quite got to 2 weeks ago, but the Chazon Ish says, you can only accuse someone of doing something on purpose if you've given them tochacha. And since nobody knows how to give anybody tochacha anymore, all they do is know how to kvetch and to blame people, then nobody's considered amazed. How can you consider them amazed? You never gave them tochacha. Oh, I don't know what to say. Okay, fine, so then don't judge them as amazed. So how can you even have sinner for the behavior? What I think is the response that we need, and this is very hard, is kol yisrael ma'arevim ala zeh lazeh. What can I do to solve this problem in some way? Maybe there's nothing. But what can I do? How can I help? Who can I empower in order to help this? And like Rebbe said, not just Arvus, but Arvus to Arvus. Maybe you'll turn around and say, yeah, but nobody's going to listen to me. They don't listen to me. They're not interested in my opinion. I can't do anything to... But maybe I can influence somebody who can influence them. Arvus to Arvus. I can support other people who are trying to make the changes that I would like to see. But I just don't think it's a big chiddush anymore for people to write articles in the paper saying it's disgraceful what the Haredi community is doing. Ashkayach, like we all know that. Like you told me something I didn't know already. Why is that not sinas chinam? Like what does that add? You want to suggest solutions? Great, suggest solutions. And try and empower the people who are trying to bring solutions. But just to kvetch, just to complain, just to reject people, to even reject behavior when the behavior at the end of the day didn't get to chacha, that's not the way forward. So Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh is a very big responsibility. Maybe there's nothing we can do, okay? But we need to think about it. There is something we can do. Good, excellent. You heard it here. There is something you can do, okay?
Which was what?
I don't know what. It's a secret. Coming up in October. Oh, yeah, she's not telling us, okay? But there's something we can do. Oh, it's called an election, I think. Okay, fine. Okay, you know something? You're right. That is a totally responsible way to behave. I want to try and do what else I can do, but maybe there are other things we can do as well. Okay. This Arvus, 603,550 times 603,550 times 48, okay? Is that a mitzvah in and of itself? So the Rambam in number 12, which I brought you here, which I won't read it all inside, he says, when he counts the 613 mitzvot, He says, I'm not going to count anything that is not a mitzvah for all time. Actually, maybe let's read it, because it's very interesting. We've never seen this in the Shir. It says number 12. Hashorish HaShlishi. The third shorish, says the Rambam, as to how I'm going to count mitzvot. She'ein roi limnot mitzvah, she'ein no hagid le'odorot. I'm not going to count anything which is not permanent. Uba'avu Hashorish HaZen. Because of this, ein roi limnot brachot v'klalot. I'm not going to count the brachot and the klalot. She'nitztavu behem begrizim ve'eval. I'm not going to count that. The lot binyan mizbech, and I'm not going to count building the mizbech that they built on Har Eval. Okay, shenitzdavenu livnota bevoan beeretz Kana. Ki elu kulam mitzvot lefisha, because they were just temporary measures. They don't add up to the 613 mitzvot. Ve'ilu hayro oilim not kol mashehu mizeh hamin. If you started counting all things like that, hayamashit tziva ba Moshe min hayom shenitnabe ad hayom shemoto. All the things that Moshe told the people to do from the day he got his nevuah at the burning bush till the day he died. You'd have an awful lot more than 613 mitzvot. Mitzvot apart from, on top of all of those other mitzvot, yotzei mishlosh meot mitzvot. There'd be another 300 mitzvot. There'd be 913 mitzvot. Kishanim lekol tzivu shebam mitzrayim, all the things we were told to do in Egypt. V'kol ma shebam miluim, all the things we had to do in miluim. Miluim here doesn't mean miluim, it means putting up the mishkan. Okay? V'zulotam. Kulam, all that we'd had to count these ksuvim b'Torah, they're all in the Torah, but they're not counted, etc., etc. And not, it says at the end, v'lo kamoshe asad zulatenu, not like other people. Who's he talking about? The Bahag. The Rambam wrote the 613 mitzvot down in the Sefer Mitzvot, la'afuke, to contradict what he felt was the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos from time of the Ga'onim, who had included more of these things, who includes things the Rambam considers, though, that's rabbinic, that can't be included, and includes permanent things. The Ramban, Nachmanides, who defends the Bahag, even though he often agrees with Maimonides, but on his Hashmatot, his Hasagot, on the Sefer HaMitzvot, he says, no, why did the Bahag include Har Grizim and Har Eval? Yes, it was a one-off mitzvah one then. We're not going to go back to Har Grizim and Har Eval. He says, but think about what that mitzvah introduced. It introduced Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazer, which does apply for all generations. And that's why they include it. And it is a separate mitzvah. That's why the Bahag says Arvus is an independent mitzvah. And not just the Bahag. Look at Rav Sadigon. Rav Sadigon wrote a list of the 613 mitzvahs in a poem. It's about maybe 3 or 4 or 5 pages long. It's a beautiful poem. It says number 14. And he goes through, it all rhymes, of course, because it's a poem. Zahav mezokek l'ketoret. So we have gold, which is made into the mizbech ha-ketoret. V'nechoshet nevuv l'dashna. And the copper, which is made into the mizbech for the offerings. L'chrot v'brachot v'klalot britot 48. Okay? And he includes in this list of the 613 mitzvot the 48, and he references there the 48 britot that are introduced on every single mitzvah because of Har Grizim and Har Eval. He says that's a mitzvah l'dorot, and I brought in 16 and 15 and 16 Rav Yeruchim Fishel Purlow, who wrote a commentary on Rav Sadigon's Seder HaMitzvot, and he brings the same ideas of the Ramban. That's because of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. Rav Yeruchim Fishel Purlow, by the way, wrote a book of about 2,000 pages of commentary on what was a 3-page or a 4-page summary of the mitzvot, because he decided once I'm doing it, I may as well do it, and he brings so many amazing things on that. So according to many shitot, this is not just an idea, but it is an ongoing mitzvah in and of itself, and it has halachic implications. And let's look at that for the last 15-16 minutes of the shir, where you'll see that Kol Yisrael Marevim Zelazeh, not just in, you know, your societal obligations to try and fix the things that are wrong, but also your obligations to every other Jew. Look at number 17. Says the Gemara, Tani Ava Breid Rav Zeira. Kol habrachot kulam. Here's an interesting halacha. Every single bracha, afal pi sheyatza, even though you did it already, motzi, you can do it again. Even though you did the mitzvah, you can do it again for someone else. How so? Chutz mi brikat halechem ubrikat hayayin. But not the brachas for bread and wine. She'im lo yatza, because if you're not eating bread and you're not drinking wine, motzi, if you didn't eat yet, if you didn't make the bracha yet, you've got a piece of bread in your hand and you didn't say hamotzi, so then you can do it for someone else. Ve'im yatza, but if you said hamotzi already, ein hamotzi, you can't do it for someone else. Meaning, if you say to me, can you just make a brei priya goffin for me, because I don't want to make my own. Yeah, I can. If I'm drinking a glass of wine, I can make it for me, and you can listen, and it's Shemaya Ka'ina. That's fine. It's as if you said the bracha. But if I'm not drinking a glass of wine, and you just come out of the blue and say, can you just say Brei Pri Hagafen for me? I said, well, no, I can't say Brei Pri Hagafen for you. I'm not drinking wine. Yeah, but, like, you know, you're a Jew. I don't know how to make the bracha. I said, okay, give me a glass of wine, and I'll make the bracha with you. But I can't just do it out of the blue. But for mitzvahs, you can. For mitzvahs, you can. Meaning, let's say I was about to make Kiddush, and I make Kiddush, and someone comes in and says, I didn't make Kiddush yet. I can make Kiddush again. I should make Kiddush again. Not just Shabbos morning, where you can make Kiddush 35 times. And some people do, it seems. Okay? Because it's just Brei Pri Hagafen. Brei Pri Hagafen in this house. I go somewhere else. Brei Pri Hagafen in that house. That's easy. But even Friday night, which involves a real bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadesh HaShabbat, I did it. Someone comes in and says, I didn't make Kiddush. I can do it again. And again, and again, and again. Because all the time that there's a Jew out there that didn't do this mitzvah, I didn't do this mitzvah either. On some real and obligating level. The Gemara asks, continues and says, what about this? Boy Rava, Birkat HaLechem Shel Matzah. What about HaMotzi of Achilas Matzah on Seder night? Ubrikas HaYayin Shel Kiddush HaYom. And what about the Brei Pri Hagafen of Kiddush? Mao, are they just regular Birkas HaNe'anin? Or are they also Birkas HaMitzvah? Kevin the Chova, who, since I have an obligation to do this, Mafik, maybe I can be mowed to you. Or Dilma, Bracha, or Bracha, Lav Chova, who, or maybe the Bracha is not really the obligation, and I can't eat Matzah again for you, so I can't make the Bracha again for you. So the Gemara answers, Tashma, the Amar of Ashi, Ki Havinam Be Rav Papi, when we are at Rav Papi's house, have a Mekadesh Lan, he made Kiddush for us Friday night. For Ki Hava Asnei Arisi, and when other people came, Midabra from the fields, have a Mekadesh Lahu, he made Kiddush again for them. So the answer is yes, you can make Brei Pri Hagafen again and again and Kiddush again and again, even though you did it already, because all the time that you did a mitzvah, if there's another Jew in the world that you could help to do that mitzvah and you didn't help, then you didn't do that mitzvah. Of course, this is a massive sugya when it comes to the issue of outreach of Kiruv. I listened to another podcast. I had two really interesting podcasts, two in a row, which is unusual. Okay, yesterday I used to listen to a podcast on the way home in my car, an interview with Rabbi Stephen Gottlieb, who is a rabbi in Philadelphia in a more of an outreach-focused community. It was a very interesting podcast on why the modern Orthodox community, the centrist YU community in America, has not taken the mitzvah of Kiruv as seriously as the Haredi community. There are Kiruv programs from Lakewood, and there are Kiruv programs from Monsey, and you come to Shai Yashuv, and you come to the base Medrash Gvo, and you come there. But the modern Orthodox community doesn't seem to, on the contrary, it's sometimes even a little bit snobby. We don't do Kiruv. Really? Why not? Why don't you reach out to other Jews? It doesn't matter that they don't know what they're doing, or that they could be brought in, or that they haven't been educated. He's a very interesting podcast. I strongly recommend it. Of course, it's more complicated than just that. But this obligation of Kiruv, of outreach, in whatever way you want to do it effectively, is based on this issue of Kol Yisrael Maravim Zeh Lazeh. Okay, good. So what comes out of this? If I haven't done a mitzvah, and someone comes along, I can do, maybe even I must do the mitzvah again. So let me ask you a question now. Let's say you want a bench, and I didn't eat bread. Can I bench for you? Someone comes along and said, I just finished a bread meal. I don't know how to bench. Can you bench? And I didn't eat anything. Can I just sit down and say, sure, I'm going to sit down at the table, and I'll sit and I'll say, you know, Hazanis Island Club is all why can't I just bench for them? Maybe I can. It's a mitzvah. He doesn't know how to do the mitzvah, so you're saying I can't. Okay, so we'll see. Look at number 18. So the Gemara brings an interesting story of Yanai Hamelech. Look at number 18. Yanai Malka Umalchisa. So Yanai Hamelech sitting in his Hasmonean palace, Umalchisa and his queen, who is his queen Shlomzion Hamalka, Krichu Rifta Bahadi Hadadi. They had breakfast together. Okay? They had bread together. Maybe it was lunch. Okay? Umidakata lehul rabbanon, and because he killed all of the Sanhedrin, lo yahavelei inish lebirchu lehu. They had no one to bench for them. He didn't know how. And she, for whatever reason, wasn't interested in doing it. So he says to his wife, man yaiv lan gavra, where can we find someone, demavarich lan, who can make a bracha for us? This itself is a social comment of extremely important proportions. He killed the whole Sanhedrin. He had a vicious disregard for human life. And yet, he's upset because he needs to bench. Okay? That's how people are.
Some people.
Yes, some people. There are people like that. I had an experience like that a few weeks ago. We live in Alenschwedt, as you know. And there was a mob came into Alenschwedt and smashed up the house of Noam Solberg, who is the deputy head of the Supreme Court, who lives in Alenschwedt. A mob of crazies that were against the Supreme Court, whatever. So they literally smashed his windows and his car, etc., etc. And they managed to get them out of the street. And then a group of them came up to me and says, "Is there a Maariv? Is there a Maariv around here? Because we just need to have a Maariv." And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I mean, you know, Maariv is the one thing, but it's Mamashis Gemara. You just smashed up somebody's house, committed a chilul of Hashem in extreme proportions, and the first thing in your mind is, Maariv, you know, got to have Maariv. So it's the same thing. So I'm not saying you shouldn't have Maariv, you should have Maariv, but there's a disconnection there of immense proportions. So here, Yanai HaMelech it needs to bench. Amrale, so she says to him, Ishtabali, promise me, swear to me, the imai zinalach, gavra, if I bring you someone who can bench, the loy mitzarisle, you're not going to kill him. You're not going to give him trouble, because every time a rabbi comes in, it's the end. Ishtabala, he said, I promise, I've got to bench, and benching is benching. Okay? I see Lushem and Shetach Achor. She brought in her brother, who she'd been hiding, Shimon ben Shetach, from the Sanhedrin. So he said, "Okay, bench, and I won't bother you." Amma, he said to them, "Hechi Avrich, what am I going to bench? You just brought me out from a cubbyhole, a hiding place, and I'm now going to bench. I'm going to bench Baruch Sha'achal Yanai v'Chaverach Mishaloi. I didn't eat. How can I bench? If you give me to eat, then I'll bench." Interesting. Shasel Hukasa. So they gave him a cup of wine. He drank a cup of wine. So Yavle Kasa Achrin, and then they brought him another cup for benching or Berech, and he benched. So he'd eaten something, so he benched. Amar Rabbi Abba Breda Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Shimon Ben Shetach Da'avad. Okay, what he did halachically legarmehu Da'avad. He paskin like that. We don't paskin like that. The Hachi Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. We paskin a little bit differently. It wasn't good enough. He just drank wine. La Olam Einu Meitze Et Arabim Yidei Chavasan Ad Sheyochel Kazayis. Dagan. You have to actually wash and bench. You have to actually have bread, at least a kazayas, and then he could have benched for them. But a cup of wine, he couldn't. Okay, shkoyach. Leaving aside the whole story and the unbelievable implications of it. So we now paskan that in theory you could bench for somebody. In theory you could, even though you never ate. Because afal pisha yatsa moitzi, you don't have an obligation anymore, but you can still be moitzi. Because why? Because kol Yisrael arayim zel azeh. So Tosfos in number 19, which I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, he asks a question. They ask a question. Really, somebody who ate a kazayas is only obligated midrabbanon. Who's obligated min haTorah? If you eat v'achalta v'savata. So Yanai and Shlom Tzion have eaten a full meal there. So how does it help if he has a kazayas? What does it help? He's a derabbanon and they're a deraisa. Surely that doesn't work. Everybody knows. The first thing they teach you, if you're on a lower level, you come in motzi. And he says, no. The only reason he needs to eat that kazayas is so he can say, Baruch she'achalnu mishelo. That he can actually say the words. But really, he doesn't even need a kazayas. Because the mechanism here is not that I'm a derabbanon, it's kol Yisrael arevim ze laseh. Really, I don't need to eat at all. The only reason he's eating there is to give him the ability to actually say the words, and therefore, ad kadei kach, says Tosfos, you really could do any mitzvah for somebody else, even though you're not obligated in that mitzvah directly now yourself. Fine.
By the way, were they only two men, or was there a third man there?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I assume that there was someone else there that couldn't bench. I mean, yeah, the king and the queen must have had a few servants. They brought in the sham. Nice question. You're going to say he counted her for the zimun? Okay, fine. I'm not getting into that. Okay. Which raises the very fascinating question: what is the obligation of women in this whole discussion? Which is kind of what you were alluding to, which I want to finish with and deal with as well. Because there's a side issue, there's a separate question raised in the Gemara in number 20, which is, what is the obligation of women to bench? Do we say, okay, v'achalta v'savata uvirachta? Okay, so you're a man, you're a woman, you eat, you fall, and you bench. Or do we say, no, v'achalta v'savata uvirachta ala aretz hatovah shenata? If you have a chelek in the land, then you have a full obligation to bench. But if you don't have a chelik in the land, then it's not clear whether you have an obligation to bench. And women usually, you know, benot slofchad, unusual circumstances, women didn't have a chelik in the land. So maybe women are not obligated in benching. So comes along the Rosh and says, okay, so if women are drabonon, and men are definitely doraita, women are sofik doraita, but definitely drabonon, you can't have a drabonon and be motzia doraita, so women can't bench for men. Ah, what happened to Kol Yisrael? Arevim ze lazeh. Didn't we just say, it doesn't matter if you're drabon, it doesn't matter if you didn't eat anything. We only make you eat something so you can say she'achalnu mishalom. So why are women different? And I must tell you, draw your attention to this, the Rosh comes in with a line here that caused 600 years of halakhic tumults, if you like. Where he says at the end of number 21, the reason it's different here is aval isha eino bichlal ha'arvas. Women are not included in arvas. Lekach eino motzia elami shechiyuvo midrabanan. Therefore, they can be motzia midrabanan, but not a doraisa. What does he mean? Women are not included in arvas. What have we seen so far to indicate that women are not included in arvas? The Brit, women weren't in the Brit. No, it says l'shechet. It says explicitly that women were standing there in the Brit. Everybody was there. So what did he mean? So there are some meforshim that say, no, don't get in a tizzy here. He just means that women are not included in arvas, in mitzvahs that they're not definitely obligated in. Which makes perfect sense. Rabbi Kiva Eger says this. Which is that, okay, women are included in arvas with, let's say, matzah. Because women and men have the same obligation to eat matzah. But not with sukkah. Not with lulav and esra, because women don't have the same obligation. But he's not saying women are not obligated at all in arvas. He's just saying there are mitzvahs which people have different obligations. But others said no, other than Nodeb Yehuda wanted to say that women were not obligated in arvas at all, and everyone tying themselves in knots to try and work out why would there be any difference to women. When does this come up, halach lemaisa, almost every single Friday night? Okay? Man goes to shul, comes to Davin's Ma'ariv, comes home, women sometimes go to shul, but they sometimes don't go to shul. So he comes home and he's going to make kiddush. So how can he make kiddush? Because he already davened, and he said in shul during davening, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadesh HaShabbat, which on a Torah level is good enough to be yotze the mitzvah, let's assume for now. His wife didn't daven ma'ariv. If she did, then obviously it's not a question. So he's now a drabanon, he has to make on a kos yayin. But she's a doraisa. She has a mitzvah d'oraisa to make kiddush. That's what everyone agrees on. So how can he make kiddush for her? Maybe she can make kiddush. Maybe she should make kiddush for him. Because she's d'oraisa and he's d'rabbanan. So have a look at number 22. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Nashim chayavos for kiddush. Women are obligated in kiddush. Afal pi shehu mitzvah sase she'azman groma. Even though it's technically a positive time-bound mitzvah. Mishum de'itkish zachar l'shamor. Because zachar and shamor come as a package. The Hani Nashi, and these women, Hoel the Isnu Bashmira, since they're obligated fully in all the negative mitzvot of Shabbat, Isnu Bashira, they're obligated also in all the positive. Umoitziyat et Anashim, and a woman can be Moitzi, a man in Kiddush, Hoel the Chayvot min HaTorah Kamotam, since their obligation is the same. Women can make Kiddush for men, men can make Kiddush for women, Shkoyach, very nice. We still haven't answered, by the way, our question of the man on Friday night, Drabon and woman is Darai, so we'll get there in a second. But can she even make kiddush for men if she's already made kiddush? And that's going to be the litmus test. Because do we really say, Kol Yisrael Ma'arevim Zeh LaZeh? She made kiddush, some man comes in from the street, I didn't make kiddush yet. She goes, no problem, I'll make kiddush for you as well. Why? Arvas. So have a look at number 23. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Olachein, and therefore, Yichola Lahotzi Afilu Hi Kfar Yatzah. Even if she's made kiddush, she can be motzi yidei kiddush. If she does yidei kiddush, kamo ish lekaman, kamo beish, just like a man. The kaman besimon reisha and gimel leinin kiddush anashim v'nashim shavim, because they're absolutely the same. So the Mishnah Berurah clearly paskens that the women are included in arvus because they're included in the mitzvah and kol yisrael ma'arevim zeh lazeh, and therefore she can make kiddush for him even if she already made kiddush. And this mitzvah affects all of us. And therefore, for the vast majority of mitzvot, I brought you the very end here in the Magen Avraham. Says that if you have just enough oil on Hanukkah to light the Hanukkah lights, and your friend doesn't have any, so you should light one light every night, like the basic mitzvah, and give him enough oil or her enough oil so they can light. You want to be a Mahadran? Well, they're not doing the mitzvah at all. That's not how it works. Kol Yisrael Yeshlehem, Kol Yisrael Aregim Zeh Lazeh. And therefore, we've seen today a lot of things. We've seen the whole idea coming in from Achan and the Brit in Har Eval and Har Grizim. We've seen halachic applications of it that go, you know, on many, many levels reverberate through the community. And I think, like I said before, and you can do with this whatever you feel is appropriate, the idea that we kvetch and complain about other people, I think, is sinas chinam. Watch out for the yud mem at the end of the kvetch. That we kvetch about people's behavior may or may not be justified, but that we take a responsibility to do what we can to help, that's where we're meant to be doing it. And therefore, please God, we should have that opportunity. We should regroup in September. We're having a few weeks off, but we'll let you know when things start up again. Rabbi Shor is here to make an announcement. Thank you, Rabbi Shor, and thank you, everybody. Wish everybody a meaningful fast and Geula Shleima.